Blog Talk Radio.
I would like to welcome everyone to John Talk Radio tonight. This is our April 4, 2015 show. My special guest is Jim Gustafson of the band Poobah. And Jim, it's great to have you back. It's been a little while since we talked, but I love your music. I know that a lot of things are going on, and I'm just glad you had the time to be on the show tonight. So welcome.
Thank you for inviting me. Yeah, I'm sitting outside of the nightclub in Parkersburg, West Virginia, that I'm playing at tonight at 9 p.m., and it's called the Sly Fox. If anybody wants to come down, it's going to be a riot.
And talk about now, you and I, in the last interview we had, we talked about an interesting story that I share a lot. When your band that you were in a long time ago, and you opened for Uriah Heep at the Ohio Theater, I believe it was.
Yes,
do you remember?
Columbus, Ohio.
Yeah, and Uriah Heep, for whatever reason, couldn't take the stage, and you guys played for quite a long time. And I always thought that was it was great to get to know you, because it was one of those things where I'm not real sure if they were late getting there or what the situation was, but I know that they couldn't they didn't seem to be able to stand up real good.
Yeah, I don't want to point any fingers at anybody, but man, it was a strange time back then. There was a lot of partying going on, especially backstage.
And it was one of those things where the guys kept coming on stage, Jim, and saying, "They're almost ready to come on, you know, just hold on," and you guys would play another song. And I don't know how many songs you guys played, but it seemed like a lot. Do you remember just having to play more songs than usual, or is that part of my imagination? Or
it was just a couple. There was just some. I don't know if it was a problem with the equipment or someone's mind.
One of those things, yeah. That was great.
Yeah, it was a great crowd. The place was sold out, and the crowd went wild. I really had a great time playing that show.
Yeah, that was a good show.
Well, I can remember of it.
It was a lot of fun. It was back, I think that was, had to be 1971. Does that sound right?
Yes, yep.
Yep. Well,
yeah, it was really a fun night. It really was a great memory. Thanks for sparking that.
Well, there we are. We were both at the same place at the Ohio Theater in 1971. And here we are, Jim, talking together in April of 2015.
I'm glad we're both still alive.
That's an awesome thing. It really does kind of blow my mind every once in a while when I think about that, because, you know, it's really cool. Your music is as fresh today as it ever was, and we want to talk about that, because I listen to a lot of music, and I listen to bands that I don't think I don't know what the word is. If you hear one of their songs, you hear the other one, and it's not as fresh and as live as your music is, Jim. Let's start the interview off with you've been writing music for a long time. You're writing music today. Before the show, we talked about how that you're writing music for the new album. Talk about that creative process and how that works with you. And first talk about that. And when you first remembered you had that gift that you could write music like that.
I recorded a record when I was 14 by a group called the Daze, D-A-Z-E-N-S, E-N-D-Z. And that 45 is still out there on the market. And in fact, it's on YouTube. And that was the very first song I ever sang. And the very first song was called What Can I Do? And it's the first time I ever played a lead guitar solo on a record. And I was 14 then. And then again, when I was 17 or 18, I recorded with Biggie Rap. And that's on YouTube too. That's also a 45. It was called Look Inside Yourself. And that, those are the first two songs that I wrote. I had a little bit of help on the second one from the singer places, and because she was great talent, Shirley from Biggie Rat.
Right.
She passed away probably, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. And the original bass player for Pluba passed away back in, I think, 2008, 2009, somewhere around there. And, man, he was a great bass player. Man, I miss his chops. He was really a talented guy. I mean, I play with good people now, too, but it was special. The music that we created together still lives on all these years later. I was looking on YouTube the other day, and I seen we had more than a quarter million views of our songs on YouTube. How come I ain't getting a check?
Well, that's another entirely different show, because I talk to musicians all the time, and I do this show, I do three or four other shows where it's mainly Jim around independent musicians. Now, I have been fortunate to talk to, you know, I was able to interview, you know, members of Uriah Heep and some bands that have experienced a lot of success, but the most part is the people that play the music because they love the music. And it's one of those things that, you know, it's, I don't even know if it's a decision, but you just do it because that's what you do. But when you talk about, you know, having that's an interesting point, because right now in the music industry, with the internet, with people being able to go to YouTube, people be able to go to Reverb Nation, people listening to that, you know, it's streaming, so they can, you know, they can listen to it for free. What are some of the things that you think need to change, Jim, to be able
to? But I would like to see change to them to start paying people.
Yeah, well, how do you do that? I mean, that's the big question.
Yeah, that is a tricky line, isn't it? I mean, it's just that if somebody spent their life's work, I don't care what they made, a car, a building, a song, it just doesn't seem right. If you spent all this time and you crafted that with years of technique, all together into a magical moment that something good happened, and then everybody just takes it for free.
Yep.
And I'm not trying to cry, because I'm telling you, I've had a great life. I've had so much freaking fun. I haven't got any regrets. And I'm still having a blast. So I may not be a wealthy person, but I'm wealthy with the experiences of life I've had.
Yeah, and I think that's awesome. And when you talk about bands, I've interviewed some groups. I try to think of some big ones that I talked to. I think the Lemon Pipers and a couple of bands like that didn't see much or any of their rewards from their records. And I think they had a number one song. And it was like,
oh, so shocked.
Yeah, it was in the contractual thing. And they felt like, wow, we were so happy to sign a record and get some bonuses and but they had to pay everything back, and the record companies got most of the royalties from all their music that they still get today. So, and then you kind of go forward 30, 40 years. Now it's difficult, if impossible, to even get a record deal. A lot of people do the do it yourself, and they market the music and it gets out there. But like you're saying, Jim, how do you turn that into profit? Now, that's something I've kicked around. That can I've kicked around for a long time. Talk to musicians, you know, a lot about it. And
it's a tough business. It really is. And there's a lot of bands that can't get paid no matter what they do. I'm not saying it's like that for everybody. And I'd say one thing that has improved for me as a musician anyways is things like iTunes and stuff like that. I actually get some money from that, even if it ain't enough to make a car payment. It's still welcome.
Yeah, any money is good. But I definitely am on your side with the artists getting paid. Now, I've interviewed musicians that they won't give any of their music out for free. Zero. And
they want it to have value.
Right. And I've talked to bands, several bands. I can name a couple. The Striped Bananas is one of them. And everything is free. They give every album, every music. And their whole idea behind that, Jim, is promotion. We get it out there. Then we, you know, then down the road, we get a established amount of people that will pay money for it. But that's not a guarantee either. So I guess you got to do it because you love to do it.
Yes, that's probably the best formula right there. Because anybody that joins a band thinking they're going to get rich, it's like one in a million.
Yeah. It's probably higher odds than that.
And even that was a lot of stroke of talent and luck and timing all being right there right at the same time.
Now, I know the last time you and I talked, we talked about how that the good part about it with the internet is that your music is played all over the world, and people from other countries listen to your music a lot. That's got to make you feel good just in that part alone.
Well, it has been fun getting so much fan mail from so many different parts of the world. You know, and it's much appreciated. I'm glad that anybody would want to take the time to listen to my creations. And, I got a bunch of them. I think I've recorded 300 songs now.
You probably have 300 more to go, I would say, at least.
I hope so. I'm not in a hurry to go anywhere. I'm having so much fun. Gosh, I feel like I ran away with the circus and won.
Now, when you let's go back to when you were writing the songs. You said when you were 14, Jim, and you know, up until just 14, 15 years old. Compare that to how your the songwriting works for you today. Is it basically the same?
I'm so much more confident. I believe that the more time that you put in on an instrument gives you a confidence where you can just get lost in the music and come up with stuff all the time. At least for me, I've written so many songs. It's always been really easy for me.
Now, that's a great point, because it does take that confidence in order to – that's one thing, Jim, I think is so cool about music that I've talked to with kids. And I've had discussions on the show a bunch of times about, you know, teenage kids and kids in school, that they will eliminate the arts programs, they'll eliminate the music programs in school because of funding. And a lot of these kids miss out, because that's some of the things that will give you confidence. You know, like you playing the guitar and knowing that, hey, I can do this. This is good. I can make music that is good. I feel good about that. And that builds your confidence.
Agreed.
So, yeah. And a lot of times with what do you think, like, with kids today, it's like, I know there's, and this is something, I don't know if you share this with me or not, but I listen to a lot of music, and I can tell there's a lot of kids on YouTube and a lot of music that technically sounds good. They're really fast and they sound really good, but I'm not sure if it's original and if it captures that soul of the 60s and 70s. What do you think of that? Does that make any sense?
Yes, I do think there's so much copying without looking for, you know, just people being satisfied with just, wow, look, I can play this song by such and such, insert name here. And then every song they do sounds just like such and such. And that might get them a job at a few places, but as far as, who am I to say, anyways, because, you know, Blind Man on the Bleachers sold a billion copies. Rubber Ducky sold a million copies, too, and so did the
yeah,
song about setting the convoy. That sold a zillion, too, so sometimes I think that, oh, it's just so whacked out and crazy. Who knows what people will buy?
It's crazy.
It's a part of me, and people pick a certain Tuba song that I thought was one of my lesser ones. You know, I mean, maybe that song had a guitar part in it, I thought it wasn't up to my standards or something. I got people saying it to me, that's my favorite song. And I'm just like, well, maybe I need to rethink this and listen to this again with a different set of ears.
You and I, if we can figure it out, I think, Jim, we can retire, because that's what people have been trying to figure out, how you can construct that, how you can get that formula where people will think, wow, that's really good. I'll buy it, or I'll love it, because I've heard music that I'm thinking that song isn't even, that's not a good song. And people, you know, I don't know what it is, but they connect with it. What is that? What's the psychology? How does that happen? There are bands that you and I have heard that people will never get into mainstream, but are as good as anything out there. I hear them all the time. But, you know, I just don't know how it works that way. But I do appreciate, you know, your music, because I've always liked it. And I'm from Ohio, and, you know, I love the Youngstown sound. I love the Cleveland sound. I love all the music. I can't get enough of it. And I think that there's so much out there from that era that, you know, is something that a lot of people need to hear. And when they do, they love it. So what do you think it was back then? Let's go back. Let's go back to the 70s. And we talked about originality, Jim.
When I made that first Tuba album, I had just come, you know, like 7 months earlier. I'd spent a week with Billy Cox from Jimi Hendrix's Band of Gypsies. And he had produced my recording sessions that were recorded in Memphis, Tennessee. And being around him was such an inspiration. I think I really, really was affected by being around that guy who had been around the genius, Jimi Hendrix.
And
Latin Rain comes out a year later, you know, on the heels of that.
So what was it that when you're listening, like another thing I want to touch on before I forget it. Well, when you were recording back in the 70s, and what equipment were you using then? Like what guitar were you using, and what were you playing through? And do you think that when I talk to folks today, Jim, a lot of them are trying to get back to that sound of the 60s and 70s. And
well,
right
I still
now,
have the same amplifier from 1974. I still own it.
That's awesome. What kind was it?
It's a 50-watt Marshall head I used to make U.S. Rock and Steamroller.
And it's still working.
Yeah, well, I had to have it repaired because it quit. Someone dumped a drink in it one night at a bar.
That'll do it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the story. So,
and,
have you ever
been a fire? I played in a bar over by Akron, and we booked two nights there. We come back the second night, the building had burned down, but it did not destroy the band equipment, but it was all covered with soot. So I tried to have it. I couldn't get that soot out of it, so I had to have it recovered.
Now,
for the longest time, it smelled like fire, just if you were in the room with it.
Yeah. So what are you playing through tonight when you're playing at the gig at the Sly Fox?
Tonight I'm using a stereo setup of a Marshall 4-channel, one of the newer ones. Beautiful amplifier. Gosh, it's got effects built into it. It's just a monstrous amp. And then I'm also using a new Fender amplifier that has got a computer in it and a selection speaker. And it sounds great, too. It sounds like a bunch of different amplifiers. And I use a lot of effects pedals and stuff because I like to change the sound of the band all the time.
Now, what's your favorite guitar that you're using? What are you using tonight?
Tonight I'm using a 1985 Jackson Neck Through Custom Solos 24 flat American made with a cabler on it. It is a fabulous guitar. And I'm also using a Garvin Allen Holdsworth model 24 fret 2 pickup model, which is also a piece of science.
So,
and I'm using
how do you
a Martin acoustic?
Oh, okay. So you do play an acoustic set. So when you
yeah,
when you
back the throttle finger style, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, when you started out, if you could, I know this is a weird question, but if you would go back and listen to yourself in 1970, 71, 72, where do you think you would see the biggest changes in the way you're playing today?
Oh, I think that through the years, I saw so many fabulous guitar players. I got to open shows for a lot of famous people, Judas Priest, Alice Cooper, Ted Nugent, ZZ Top. And I saw all these great guitar players and listened to their great licks. And then I went to a jazz concert in Pittsburgh at the Stanley Theater, and I saw Al Di Meola there back in the mid-70s. And
oh, yeah.
He was just such a monster on guitar that he almost made me feel like I needed to rethink how I played. But then on the other hand, I'd go into the record store, and the guy would be telling me he had just sold out of Pooba albums, two boxes of them, and he couldn't sell this great guitar player's album because it was all instrumental, didn't have any vocals. He said he only sold 3 copies of it and 100 of Pooba's. So I thought, well, maybe I don't want to step into that zone where I alienate myself from the public. I don't want to only play for musicians. I want to play for everybody. So, and I think that's a good word of advice to anybody who, you know, I mean, I'm not telling anybody what to do. You go do whatever you want. I don't care if you're not hurting anybody. As far as music goes, play whatever pleases you. Just in a, if you put yourself in a corner, you're only going to be able to play the places that have that corner. And if there's none in your town, you'll have to travel to other towns, and maybe you will, you won't get paid. And I'm not saying that money should be a motive for playing music, because it's probably not a good idea. It's probably better for a person to have a job and play on the weekends. I don't know. I just said I was a crazy person, and I've traveled around all my life, and I've been a bit of a gypsy, and I've really spread the name Poop around far and wide, and I'm glad I did now, because people from all these states and countries and Europe and South America are all now contacting me and ordering my CDs and downloads on iTunes, and I thank all those people. I'm glad that I took the time to spread that word of Poop.
Yeah, I am too. Now, when you, excuse me, Jim, when you were writing today, and you said that, you know, you heard, you know, Al DiMeola and all these different people, and it was out there. And when you write music today, do you think, okay, I do have to write within the confines of my band and my fan base? Do you ever write things that, when you're just like going after it and it's going a different direction, you're thinking, okay, that's pretty cool too. Do you have like another album of music that you think might be a little different that you might release sometime?
Well, I did a song once. It was like 10 minutes long, and we had a room full of people, and at the end of the song, these three girls shout out, "We want to dance!" There may have been some advice in that. But I pretty much always just done whatever I felt like and had a stupid attitude of, I'm going to do what I like, and if you don't like it, don't listen to it, and I'm going to have fun, and I'm going to do what I want, and if I get lucky, then good for me, and if I make something that sucks, I'm sorry that you didn't like it.
Well, let's play another song. Is there one of the songs you sent me you would like to play right now? And maybe talk about it. I know that we've got Smoking with Rum and Right. Let's play that one. Talk about that one a little bit before we play it, Jim.
Smoking with a bottle of rum. You know, I saw that all these places were legalizing pot and stuff, and I don't know, I just sparked an idea to write a song about smoking and drinking.
this is on the news album Cosmic Rock, correct?
Yeah, he's right. And it's available on iTunes or CD Baby.
And you can also go to your website, which is poobah.com. It's also on Reverb Nation. And
that's poobaband.com.
Poobaband, okay.
Yeah, and if you don't add that word band, you get some other place.
Okay. Yeah, you can go some strange places on the internet. And we want people to go to the poobaband.com. And we'll be right back after this. This is Smoking with Rum, and we'll be right back with a conversation with Jim right after this.
Give me some rum. Country,
And we're back with Jim from the band Pooh Bah. He is Pooh Bah, and you can go on the website poohbahband.com, and there are many albums out there from Jim's career that you can listen to, and we highly recommend it. I'm a big fan, Jim, and I really appreciate, you know, you being on the show tonight. I think that you deserve all the fortune and fame that you can, because you're a very talented person, and I really enjoy listening to your music. It's right there with just about everybody else, so doing a great job.
That's a heck of a compliment. Thank you so much.
Well,
I've worked really hard on it.
And I know you have, and I think it's – I would love, you know, to come and hear you play live sometime. I haven't been able to do that yet. What are some of the places –
We're going to be near Columbus May 2nd. We're playing just north of Columbus in Mount Vernon.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know where that is.
At a place called Flopper's Bar and Grill.
Flopper's.
Like the Roaring Twenties, Flopper's. That's High Street, West High Street in Mount Vernon, Ohio. That'd be May 2nd, Pooh Bah.
Pooh Bah. That sounds good. And I'll try to get there. Is that on a – well, I could check that out. But
that's a Saturday.
That sounds good. Now, you were talking about the bass player that you had, Jen, that you really loved. And I'm just curious, being a bass player, what was it – the one that had passed away, the person in Pooh Bah. What was it – I just wanted to ask you, what was it about his bass and his chops and the way he played that was – special? Because I always love that about when people point out bass players, because there's a lot of different styles, and a good bass player is really hard to find.
Yes, that's true. He was in a jazz band for a year, and he wanted to play rock. He really loved the Beatles. And Paul McCartney was a great guy to emulate, because he played for the song, and then Phil Jones on those two albums, he played the bass for the song, and it wasn't look how many notes I can squeeze into this measure, and look how I can play lead bass while you're singing. I mean, I'm not saying that that's a good idea. I'm mocking it, actually. He played for the song, and he was a great musician with a great sense of harmony, and he always was good on vocal harmonies, too. He was a valuable asset, and I'm really sorry to see cancer take his life.
Yeah, that's very sad. Do you think that a drummer makes a better bass player, or a guitar player makes a better bass player?
Anybody makes a better bass player if they play bass instead of guitar on bass, or whatever. You know what I mean? If you go up and you interfere with the vocals or the guitar with what you're playing, then you're not a good bassist. A bassist plays for the song, in my opinion. There's room for every type of playing in some type of song or band. And understand what suits Pooh Bah music to me is someone that plays for the song. I love jazz, I love blues, I love classical, and I love guitar rock. Gosh, I love it. I love all the bands like Jeff Beck and Jimmy Page and Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix and Ritchie Blackmore. Those were all great trend-setting guitar players that, you know, there's not a whole lot of people who have equaled them.
And I agree 100% with you. I've listened to, you know, bass players that were almost playing as many notes as the lead guitar player were. And I'm thinking, that doesn't even fit a lot of times. You know, you have to play that bottom. You have to play that, you know, lay that foundation for the vocals and for the leads and stuff like that.
A musician won't walk all over you like that.
Right. Yep. And why don't you who do you play? Who are you playing with currently? Who are the musicians that you're playing with right now?
I've actually been using two different bands. One like for Southern United States. One for the Northern United States. And Southern United States, I've been using Mike Fortino on drums. He's from Baltimore, Maryland. And I'm using Charlie Carver from Kentucky on bass. And Larry Powers is a backup vocalist and percussionist. And, of course, me on lead vocals and lead guitar. And then in the Northern USA, I've been using Daniel Clark on bass and Bill Pito on drums. Bill's from Pennsylvania and Dan's from Columbiana, Ohio, near Cleveland. And they're all musicians. They're all great, and it's a pleasure to play with all of them.
That's cool. And I was kind of thinking, what was it about those musicians, Jim, that you felt fit into your music?
Well, I try to get people that will listen to the recording and play the record, something like it, and not try to rewrite your song. That really sucks when somebody comes in and acts like the part that the other guy did just sucked, and they have to play it that way, and then they play that same riff in every song and expect you to just take it. And not me, buddy. They shut them the door.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I like that. And it's your band. I mean, so you should be able to. How is it, like, once some people think of musicians, and we talked about the money part, Jim, but it's a business, and you have to run it as a business, and you have to be able to do that. And sometimes things work out, and sometimes they don't. And when you have musicians that have to be serious about it, and they have to know that this isn't, you know, it's work. And it takes practice, and it takes work, and it takes dedication. Is it easier today to find people like that, or than it was?
It's never been easy. It's never ever been easy. It's always been hard for me, and I can't even begin to tell you how I managed to find the way and the money to record all those albums in those studios, and somehow get them pressed and released and to the public. It's a mystery to me how it all happened, and it's been such a hard road with a lot of sacrifice and a lot of broken relationships, and travel around with people can be really hard and stuff. I salute anybody who could keep their train on the tracks long enough to get paid.
And it's, well, one thing that's amazing is the body of work that you have. And all the CDs, and just so people know, that can they go through your website to purchase the CDs and get the downloads? Because I want them to be able to.
Most of the 13 Tuba releases are on TubaBand.com. There's a couple I haven't listed because I keep forgetting.
Well, you have a lot.
Yes, I keep pretty busy, and I will be changing all that soon as I can find the time. I got a bunch of manuals I have to read for new pieces of equipment and stuff. Nothing ever can it's hard for me. You know, I like to sit down and watch a movie there with my girl and enjoy that, but I find myself sometimes being distracted in the middle of shows and start thinking about song lyrics, and I have to go get a piece of paper and write it down. I've got a big book of song lyrics and songs I haven't even used yet.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that too, because, you know, with the latest release you have, you probably have enough material for several albums. Now, how does that work? When you were starting to put things together, Jim, for a Cosmic Rock, I know you probably had a lot of songs that you could have put on there. How did you choose the songs?
Well, I would sit down with friends and play them the songs and let them tell me which songs they liked. Because, you know, a lot of times I might pick a song because it's got what I think is really an intricate, delicious guitar section, and I might think that's cool. Someone else will listen to the lyrics and say, wow, that really applies to my life. I love this song. And I'm thinking, well, it doesn't have the guitar solo on it. But I've learned to really respect other people's opinions about it. And sometimes, like when I made it the compilation After and Before, I listened to people who wrote to me and stuff, and I put all these songs, like two songs from this album, two songs from that album, two songs from this album, two songs from that album. When you have more than 13 albums to choose from, you can make a pretty tasty morsel.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking about when you just put together Cosmic Rock. I mean, how did you choose those songs? Because you probably had a lot going on, and I think you probably do right now, I mean, with writing songs that could be on that album. Was there certain songs that you thought wouldn't fit to the album and some that did? I mean, you said you got input from your friends, but you're the one that probably had to make the final decision on which one stuck and which one didn't.
Yesterday I was invited to a friend's house out in the country, And when I got there, he was playing a CD of tuba with songs that I'd given him years ago. I mean, 10 years ago. And I never released them. And he's going, I really like this song. And I'm thinking, well, I didn't release this because I like this song. And he's going to tell me how good it was. And so I just need to rethink what I think is good sometimes. Sometimes I didn't think that the bass or the guitar or the drums or something were what I wanted to hear, or the vocals. Maybe I didn't like my lyrics. I didn't like the harmony or something. There's just so many variables. But when someone else tells you this is really a great song, and I'm thinking, well, gosh, I didn't like that song. Maybe I need to listen to it again. Out of the woods.
Well, you've got a lot of them probably in your head floating around. So what when you put together your playlist, like playing tonight, and how do you determine which songs to play? Now, and also, do you kind of change that up sometimes just according to how things are going maybe in the gig?
Well, I sure do. Now that I've played around 3,000 shows with Poop on the last, since 1972, I've just learn from live shows which songs seem to get the most results from people's getting into it. But, you know, then again I say that, and then maybe on Friday you play that song, and on Saturday you play it, and it only goes over half as well as it did Friday. It's just sometimes there's no rhyme or reason, but I pick a lot of songs that I like Bullying and Mr. Destroyer and Live to Work. We do all those songs at every show, and then we do Mushroom Man off of Underground, and So Frustrating off of Wizard of Psych, and Not Amusing off there, and Learning to Live, and off of Cosmic Rock, we're doing Down by the Riverside, and Master of Influence. I guess I didn't send you that back then.
No, I don't have that one, but I'd like to play another song and out of the ones that you sent me. Would you like to play We're All Crazy? Now, that's a tribute to the Gods. Would you like to talk about that?
Yes, I was asked by the Gods manager, John Gard, if I would be interested in putting a tribute track on their new CD, Gods Tribute, which is out now and is available at Gods Online on Facebook. Pooba also has a Facebook page. I'm going to go there and like us, and I'll send you $100 of Monopoly money. Anyway, Eric Moore, I sent him a song I did, and they loved it. And they made it the first song on the tribute album, and you've got it.
And we're going to play it, and then we'll be right back with Jim right after this.
Hello.
The bank, and we need hot and getting high. Yeah, we walk a little fun, like I tell the heart. Gonna do it to you till we die. We love you like a traveling Jew. You know we wanna make you get up and scream. Come tomorrow, there'll be no sorrow. Tonight is just a dream. We're all crazy, getting paid just to go insane. We're all crazy, we got it made just to go insane. Now out on the road with a heavy load, gonna find a local rock and roll queen. Here we go, off to the show, I'm gonna do it like you never seen. Oh, we're very loud, nuts and jealous, but we try to make them fall on their face. Come from east to west, back to the middle is best. Find another in our place. We're all crazy, got it made, get to go insane. We're all crazy, get paid just to go insane.
Thank you.
back on John Talk Radio with my buddy Jim from Cuba. Jim, thank you so much for I know you're busy and you've got a lot going on, but thank you so much for being on the show tonight. I truly appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for asking me, and maybe again sometime.
Oh, yeah. I definitely will do that. And now, we've got a few minutes left, and is there anything you'd like to talk about, maybe some things that are coming up, some summer things or some projects or anything you'd like to talk about?
We're scheduled to do some festivals, one with Blue Oyster Cult and David Allen Coe near Cleveland this summer. And also up near Maryland, right around Hagerstown, Maryland, and right across the state line in Waynesville, Pennsylvania, we're going to play with Ronnie Atkins from Kix. He's playing with us at a place called the Ballroom in Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, May 15th. And it should be a great time. And if you go to PubaBand.com, we have all our dates posted on there. We're going to be in Pennsylvania, Ohio, West Virginia, Maryland. And we're going to keep spreading that as we keep getting all this fan mail from all these areas. People keep telling me they want to see us, so we're going to have to get out there. And hopefully we'll get to Europe within the next year.
No, that would be great.
We've had several opportunities to go over there and play festivals, and we just couldn't get it all together with the finances and stuff. But things are looking good for the future here, and Cuba just seems to keep getting more and more popular all the time, and I certainly am appreciative to anybody out there who takes the time to listen to us. God bless y'all.
Well, we love it. Thank you so much, Jim. We appreciate it. And have a great gig tonight. And we will. And remember to check them out on PubaBand.com. And we'll keep playing your music.
Thanks a lot. Oh, by the way, if anybody's broke and they can't buy a CD, you can get 6 free songs on the Puba Facebook page.
You can't beat that. Thanks so much, Jim. Take care, and we'll talk to you later. And thanks, everyone, for supporting independent musicians and supporting this show. And we'll talk to everybody later. Thanks.
Thank you.
Sending me a signal, got the message. Got your gift of energy. Feel it beating my soul. My head, my heart. We'll be right back.
Stop, oh.